For the record, please. Mr. Grady, is there is it your recommendation that we would take up the items in closed session, or are there items that could be covered in open session?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest we start an open session. Depending on the questions, if any, we can make a decision to go into closed session at that point.
Okay.
Okay, item 7. From Corporation Counsel submitting an informational monthly report providing an update on the status of pending litigation. This item will also be considered by the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Grady?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I intend to be brief, which is one of the reasons I think we can stay in open session. There's not a lot new to tell you from since last month. You have the list, but I really have nothing new to tell you on anything except for one case, which is number 11 on the list. Obviously, if you have questions, I'll answer any questions. But with respect to item 11, you may recall the county board authorized litigation in connection with the Register of Deeds office to try to collect transfer taxes or transfer fees that were not paid by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The litigation, we hired an outside law firm on a contingency basis. There's no cost to the county for this litigation. It was started, among other things, based on a Michigan federal court case that was in favor of the governmental entity over there. Since that case has been filed, unfortunately, most of the cases, an issue litigated around the country right now, and most of the cases around the country have been falling against our position. And just recently, the Sixth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, which covers Michigan, reversed that Michigan lower court case. We are in the Seventh Circuit. We're in the federal district court that is a part of the Seventh Circuit, so we're not bound by that decision. The Seventh Circuit already has another case like this that came out of Illinois in front of it. So we're expecting what will happen is Judge Clavert, who has our case, will probably wait for a decision from the Seventh Circuit on the Illinois case, and then probably will follow that precedent. But the short message is that the case is not looking as likely to succeed as it might have at the beginning. But again, I would reiterate, this was a contingency fee case with the costs covered by the plaintiff's law firm, so the county does not run any financial risk should it not succeed. Again, I don't want to say we've lost because we haven't lost yet, but there are some cases out there in other jurisdictions that are going against our position. Okay. Other than that, I don't think I have any other new items for you. Everything else is nothing new since I reported last month.
Supervisor Weissach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On number 14, are we done now with the House of Corrections? Did the sheriff appeal, or could you give us an update on it?
Mr. Chairman, the sheriff did appeal that decision to the Court of Appeals. It's not even been briefed yet, but it's in the early stages of an appeal. That case is handled on that issue by an outside counsel from Gonzalez, Saggio, and Harlan for the county. As you know, we won in the court of, in the lower court, in the circuit court, but the sheriff did appeal through Attorney Whitcomb on that case.
Is there any kind of way that we could persuade the sheriff to, I guess my question is there a process to withdraw this? I mean, I can understand in a moment of, frustration or whatever, he said, yeah, we're going to appeal this. But now, with everything that's transpired, hopefully now cooler heads can prevail, and the ridiculousness of going forward with this at a cost of, this isn't free to appeal it.
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak for the sheriff, obviously, but I would note that in addition to appealing this case, item number 6 is a case involving his authority to lay off captains, and that decision went through the Civil Service Commission against him, went to circuit court against him, but he has appealed that decision as well. So that would indicate someone not likely to withdraw his appeals, but you know, as I said, I can't answer the question, but he has asked Attorney Whitcomb to appeal both those decisions.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, then I know we've kind of asked in the past, but I think maybe a direct request from the chair to get a dollar tally of what these are costing us, and who's paying it, whether it's our insurance company or out of the court counsel's office, you know, or out of the sheriff's budget. Because I think, like I said, you can run into the wall once. Hopefully you wake up to that and don't run into the wall again.
The request is a tally relative to lawsuits involving the sheriff's office.
The dollar cost to the taxpayers in Milwaukee County, or to our insurance company, or our departmental allocations. We, you know, court counsel's office has a budget for what outside counsel, things like that. That I just like to know how many of these fruitless. What's the cost of these actions?
Do we even know that yet? Are we getting Whitcomb's bills, or we haven't been paying those, have we?
So Chairman,
we probably don't have a final tally yet.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the question from Supervisor Weishan, there's two components. One is our counsel. In both of these cases, the same attorney from Gonzalez, Saggio, and Harlan is representing the county's interests, but he is being paid through the mutual in both cases. So the bills are going directly to the mutual. We could probably get the information on what it's costing the mutual and us via our deductible on that end. On the end with Mr. Whitcomb, we've not received, we were getting bills originally, but we have not received any for probably 6 months, I would guess. So they're not coming to us. I don't know. We'd probably have to ask either the sheriff's office to provide that information. Hmm.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification. We did receive updated invoices from the sheriff's office with respect to Attorney Whitcomb's bills, but except for those cases in which there were agreements prior to the sheriff filing lawsuits on his behalf against the county, or him coming to Corporation Counsel and saying, you know, can you all do it, and we weren't able to because of a conflict, we've not paid those bills. It's my understanding that Attorney Whitcomb may go to court to seek a court to force the county to pay because he has provided those services.
So what would be the mechanism to get a report on those expenses? You're saying they would have to come from two different places. You'd be able to provide what our outside counsel has been through the mutual, and we would need a report.
That's correct. What Mr. Grady said is correct. We can get from the mutual the fees that have been paid on behalf of the sheriff fiscal year 2012 and 2013, if that's what you want, or even before. With respect to those fees that Attorney Whitcomb is incurring on behalf of the sheriff, I can look at the latest email request that I received maybe 4 weeks ago and provide you with that. And that will show you, you know, what he's asking to be paid on, you know, the cases that you have in front of you.
I think I would appreciate that if it could be provided to the committee, 12 and 13 year-to-date. Any information you could provide, I think it's been talked about significantly over the last year, that we need to get a sense of what this is running. Supervisor Weishan.
Shifting gears a little bit, item 16, dead people. With Frederick Hospital, could you just give us a up to date on that issue?
Essentially, I think I reported last month that the State Division of Hearings and Appeals ruled in favor of Frederick and allowing them to proceed forward with their construction and the exhumation of the bodies. And under our lease agreement with Frederick, we are required to pay those costs. And at one point, the State Historical Society had filed an appeal, for lack of a better word, of that decision, but they have withdrawn their appeal. We tried to inquire from them why they decided to file it and then drop it, but they declined to give us a reason. The council just would not provide a reason. So it is effectively done. And so I don't know if the construction's actually started yet, but if it hasn't, I'm sure it will very shortly. So we will be incurring those costs. I believe that Mr. Mansky reported previously that he had allocated or set aside, I'm not sure what the right accounting term is, for these costs, but it's effectively done.
Of those,
from a legal standpoint, done.
Of those remains that are dug up and moved, then the county's responsible for finding an appropriate place to put them?
I believe...
It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that it's not the county's responsibility to find a place for them, but to the extent that there are fees incurred with respect to placing those bodies, the county is responsible for that. But we don't have any control over where they are. We don't know if they're planning to put the bodies back in the ground or something else, but the county has to pay for it per our agreement.
Okay, so it's Freighter that will take care of that side of it?
That is correct.
And who's working, okay, now that the legal piece of it has concluded, who's working with Freighter to determine, I mean, to try to control those costs, or, I mean, we just got a blank checkbook?
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, yes. There is nothing in the agreement with Freighter that requires them to work with the county. They are essentially doing whatever it is that they're going to do, and then they're going to bill the county for it, which is why we initially raised concern and filed our documents to try to preclude this and requested the administrative law judge to find that what they were doing was cost prohibitive for the county and the county taxpayers. But the ALJ ruled against the county and all the other folks who had filed, and now, as Mr. Grady said, it's essentially done from a legal standpoint. We're basically waiting on the bills. They have no obligation to work with us.
They have no obligation, but I mean,
nor
public opinion or anything else. We don't think that there's any reason they would talk to us about how we would limit the costs to the extent possible. Or I mean, no one's having any conversations. Who's responsible?
Mr. Chairman, quite frankly, the Freighter took, they weren't appreciative of the fact that the county inserted itself in this process. And they basically told us to go pound sand, that was their right per the agreement that we've entered into with them. And there's been no willingness to work with the county to try to make the cost less or even keep us in the loop. They've essentially said it's our authority and we're going to do it. And in addition to that, because the county did try to have an ALJ find that what they were doing was not appropriate in terms of county taxpayer dollars, they have not only said we don't have to work with you, but they have implied to us that they're planning to seek attorney's fees against us for trying to assert a right to, you know, mitigate our costs.
Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you. And this is not for counsel, but to answer your question, I think this falls under the responsibility of the county executive in the day-to-day operation. He should be there talking to the head of Freighter and injecting himself in there, because it's his responsibility to mitigate the day-to-day, the cost and responsibility. I think that our Corp Counsel's office has performed their task, but it's not their task. The legal part is over. Now it is the people who are supposed to be running things like DAS and the exec's office to insert themselves and manage the day-to-day operations so this thing doesn't get out of hand. Corp Counsel's office did their part. They did all the legal operations. The judge, you know, all of that's been finalized. Now the side of mitigating the cost falls on the responsibility of the exec's office, and the failure for them to step forward doesn't surprise me, because they've abdicated their responsibility in many other areas, especially when it comes to the county grounds, whether it is power lines or water utilities. And this, now this burial thing is just one more thing out at the county grounds where they've abdicated all responsibility and just kind of just magically is supposed to all take care of itself. And it's led to huge bills for Milwaukee County.
And they're not present.
Yeah, would be surprised.
AWOL. Yeah. Supervisor
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Supervisor Weishon, but I would ask that we, as a county board, be diligent, too, that, you know, we're not the... They don't have the total control and power. I mean, every dog has his day. And so, yeah, they're winning on this one. But, you know, we got a ton of land out there. You know, we made a deal with them for the emergency services, some of the buildings out there. There's going to come a time that they're going to need us. And so it's imperative, whether this county executive is still in office or any of us are still in office, I would hope that... we are diligent that there's somebody, you know, keeping records, that there's going to come a time that Fragrant's going to need us, and we're going to remember this, okay? So it's not just totally one-sided, just that right now they're winning.
Attorney Walker, I don't see on the list litigation that was authorized relative to the couture. But I read in the paper that a different strategy is underway. Is that part of our legal strategy? And if so, why aren't we being informed of it? Or what's going on with that?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we are certainly able to talk to you about the update with the Transit Center, but I would request that at this time that we would go into closed session to talk about the legal strategy that this committee and the board authorized us to go forward with.
It's under litigation. I mean, it's part of a litigation update. It was authorized. It was litigation that was authorized by this committee months ago. It's not on the list, but the list, in noticing the list, it says it's not an all-inclusive list. And we can discuss any litigation or pending litigation. Is it inappropriate that we would discuss that item?
Mr. Chairman, I think it is permissible for you to do that. As you noted, the memo from our office to the committee specifically notes that our office is prepared to discuss any pending litigation or claim involving Milwaukee County at your discretion. These are the ones on the list are the ones we think are of primary interest to you, but we obviously have lots of other litigation. So I believe if you want to do that, we can. I agree that it should be in closed session. I would also note, and I see Supervisor Jurcik has come into the room, I believe, although I haven't seen the agenda, that this will be on the ECD committee agenda, I believe.
Okay.
Not to take it away from this committee. I don't mean that.
The committee authorized it, so... I think they're entitled to an update.
You want me to do the closed session thing?
Well, before we, I'm open to that. Before we do the closed session, can you tell me, I mean, there are aspects of this that are public. So, I mean, it's come out publicly that there's a state budget amendment dealing with this issue. Is that public action, to use the state legislature, is that an element in our legal strategy, or is that separate and apart from our legal strategy? Because our legal, what I know of the committee doing was authorization relative to a litigation, but I don't know that we hired a firm to pursue a legislative legal resolution.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that the information that you've read about in the paper is part and parcel of the county's legal strategy.
So at what point does the committee that authorized litigation inform that there's a divergent legal strategy that's never been discussed with the committee? I'm asking about it now, but why wouldn't the committee be informed that a novel new legislative strategy has developed as a resolution to what was previously a litigation strategy?
I guess that because you're asking about it now, you know, we will provide you with an update, but it was, you know, we looked at the authorization that this committee provided and, you know, was to go forward with the litigation, and I think there was some other language that said or pursue other avenues that would get us to the point of, you know, the litigation being resolved, and that's ultimately what we want to accomplish. And so, quite honestly, we would have continued to provide you with updates as we proceeded down the path, but for whatever reason, it wasn't on this month's list of items to update you on.
I won't give my value judgment on what I think of that. But doesn't this county have a process by which to authorize legislative action? And this clearly falls outside of that legislative action. It was not explicitly the authorization provided when we retained this council on this issue.
Mr. Chairman, the resolution, and I don't have it with me because I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but the resolution authorizing the retention of outside counsel for this development project, in our office's opinion, is worded broadly enough to include taking essentially any action necessary to meet the goals of that resolution. And this, we believe, falls within that goal because it is part and parcel of our legal strategy, and it's also part and parcel of the strategy related to title insurance. And so those were both part of the resolution. Now, you're correct that there's a separate IGR process for approving legislation, but the county board has already authorized a resolution, adopted a resolution authorizing this action. And we can tell you why in closed session, I think, why we believe that, because that gets into our strategy. But we do believe it's consistent. What has taken place is consistent with what this board authorized.
What, Mr. Chair,
Brunner,
on what basis, what policy directive was given that caused the county's representatives to go to Madison and inject themselves into the process without, as far as I understand it, the direction of the county board, the policy-making body of this government? Or was this an initiative on the part of the executive's office, who, as I understand it, isn't charged with determination of policy? And if it was he within his bounds to do so, given what we authorized earlier?
Mr. Chairman, as I said, Ms. Walker and I believe that the prior county board resolution authorized this action, perhaps not expressly, but it is... The resolution was fairly broad, and again, I don't have it in front of me, and I wish I did, but we believe it was authorized. And as to the impetus behind this action, I would tell you it was from our attorneys. It was not from the exec's office. This was a direction suggested and made by our outside counsel as a method to implement legal strategy. And again, I'd prefer to do the details of why we believe that in closed session, but this was a legal strategy move.
That doesn't really...
It was a directive of the... So the executive chose the direction, the legal strategy that we would, on the advice of counsel.
By broadly interpreting his authority based on an intention that we may not have expressed or had when we authorized the founding document, in effect. My understanding is that... our economic development director spent some time in Madison attempting to influence the outcome of what was perhaps budget summary line 18, if I'm recalling that correctly, that changed the public trust doctrine interpretation to a 1913 standard rather than the constitutionally determined earlier 1884 map that has been discovered. It seems to me what's happening here is the executive is again encroaching on the legislative authority that we hold to determine policy and going off willy-nilly without our consent to establish policies that we haven't approved. Now, you know, And this is not the first time, as we all understand. But if that accurately, and perhaps it doesn't, characterizes the circumstance, aren't we headed onto some very, very shaky ground here in terms of separation of powers?
Is that rhetorical?
Well, it actually is a question. And I think some response to it would be helpful in guiding our future legislative behavior. Do we have to micromanage? Are we being asked to micromanage the process a policy implementation to make sure that the policies that we authorize are the policies that are being pursued by the executive branch, or is the executive branch being permitted by our inaction to continue to stretch his authority beyond any reasonable point?
I think the question should be for Corp Counsel. This committee is the one that authorized the contract. Without getting into the details of the different strategies that were discussed in closed session, different strategies were discussed in a fair amount of detail, and some direction was provided. When did this committee, the client, authorizing the services, give away their authority to direct that? And when did the exec become the exclusive client on this contract?
Mr. Chairman, the client is still the county. I don't believe the client is the county exec or the county board, but it is the county. As Mr. Grady and I have indicated, we believe that the resolution that this committee authorized did, in fact, encompass the legal strategy that our outside counsel ended up recommending to us as a strategy. This was not contemplated at the time that we came before this committee, but given the update or the progress that we had been making, this strategy was recommended and pursued based on the outside counsel recommendation.
By whom? Recommended and pursued?
Our outside counsel recommended that we pursue this strategy.
Not charged with making policy?
No, Mr. Chairman, no.
It's not, well, that's the way you're making it sound.
Okay, let's.
And when you see, you believe, it's what we believe as policymakers, I think, that is germane here. So your interpretation, we're happy that you're willing to define it, but we are the policymakers, and it seems to me that all the efforts that have been made to date to erode that policymaking authority are going to put us in a rather defensive posture about policy, and perhaps this is an issue upon which we ought to begin to press. Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Weishaupt and then Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess, I guess my big thing on this is we try to give you as much flexibility as possible, because I think it is the will of the board that we want to see this project happen. But what I find a bit troubling is that we would not be informed to the extent of something, if this doesn't rise to the occasion of, yeah, let's put that on the list and let's have a detailed information session for the committee, because I think it is quite an extraordinary step to go and say we're going to change a state law and a state the doctrine that's been in effect for the last 98 years. I mean, that's a huge thing, and I think if that is our strategy, I think you're smart enough to realize that that's a hot button issue enough that we should be entitled to some kind of informational report, and I guess that's what I find disappointing, because now if I see a resolution that says, okay, we want to go to court on something, I'm not going to give you that flexibility. I'm going to say everything has got to be exact to the letter, and if you deviate from that. And so that's, I don't want to do that. I don't want to get into that ridiculous game. I think that you guys are we have a very good outside counsel, and you are competent attorneys. But I want the respect, bless you, that we get the information back appropriately, especially on these things that are huge issues. Building a 42-story building in downtown Milwaukee, the public trust doctrine, all this kind of stuff, I think we're entitled to information about what's happening here. And just because we vaguely worded stuff doesn't mean that we've abdicated that ability to get that information. So that's what I have a problem with. I wanted to give you guys as much flexibility, But now I feel a level of betrayal, and I feel wrong that I feel I was owed at least a certain level of respect to come back and say, this is what we're doing, and you might want to get a heads up because it's a pretty big issue. And I feel that your office didn't afford us that respect.
Thank you. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very appreciative of the dialogue, the back and forth that has occurred regarding the downtown transit center and the resolution that was passed by this committee and the county board months ago. I would request that we go into closed session so we can hear what Corporation Council has to tell us. Again, I'm very appreciative of what I've heard this morning because it shows that there's concern that for what we've done, that there may not have been the communication that could have occurred, and that we have to go forward, and all of us need to be informed, at least on this committee at this time, as to what's going on. So I want to hear from our council as it relates to what has transpired, particularly with outside counsel and involvement of anybody, and that might include the Economic Development Director.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If it's a pleasure of the committee to go in closed session, we will, but I think that there's a public issue that we're also discussing related to this, which I think we can remain in open session for. Supervisor Jurczyk, you'll be next. I mean, the bottom line is we're being asked to believe that it was somehow just inadvertent that we weren't informed when a process has been underway for weeks involving a major public policy issue that, you know, came out of the closet in the wee hours just the other day. But it's been underway for weeks. It's clear to me that there was an intention not to share that. And I think that that's extremely disturbing. It seems like it sort of came out by accident. So, Supervisor Jurczyk.
Thank you. I just want to tell the committee that I met with Bushnell Nielsen, who is their special counsel on this, and I do have I believe the language that Attorney Grading is referring to is in the resolution, and I'll read it, and you can correct me if this is not the one you were thinking of, is authorized to take any actions as may be appropriate necessary to assure the issuance of title insurance policy. And I agree that is broad language, but you can't parse it by ignoring the context. And it was to take appropriate necessary action to assure the issuance of a title insurance policy. Now, I sat down with Bushnell Nielsen and Mr. Grady and Corp Counsel Walker and asked him, I started the conversation with a real basic question, who's the client? And they were taken back a little bit. They said the county is the client. I said, what are you representing us on? They had never received the downtown transit resolution, the compromise that was worked out by the chairwoman. And I said to them, to our attorneys, you've never received this resolution when that is the position of this county? And I was a little taken aback by that, but I provided the resolution to them. The resolution clearly states that the downtown transit center, the actions of the county, that's all of us acting together because it was never vetoed and it was passed by the board, requires clearing the public trust issue. Now, that public trust issue, there are members within this community which some of us represent. Certainly, Supervisor Broderick has many constituents in his area that are members of Preserve Our Park. We provided the public hearing on the public trust issue, which is what a deliberative legislative branch does. And I've had several conversations with our attorney to get updates on where we are with respect to clearing the title issues. Now, I agree with Supervisor Weishan. I think we are all in good faith trying to advance that resolution, which states the county position. And I can tell you, I have learned that Bushnell Nielsen, our attorney, who understood his job to be the representation of that resolution and the position of this county, that he went and lobbied for a change. And just to show you how outrageous this is, the public trust issue is a Wisconsin constitutional provision. It requires that the DNR act as the trustee for public trust lands. And that requires fiduciary responsibilities. The legislators have taken it upon themselves to state, as if they have direct contact to God, they're playing God. Here is where the line is for public trust lands, and we will define it. And they went so far as to say DNR will not be called upon to account for where we draw the land and the line. If that is allowed to stand, I can tell you every homeowner that owns land along lake beds or river beds had better start getting worried about where their land ownership ends and where the public rights begin. If the legislature can do things like that, it's outrageous. But what's even more outrageous is the attorney that we have representing us put on a hat as a lobbyist, and he didn't tell the client. I think we better start drawing the line in the sand right now, and I'm going to suggest to you we need to get a complaint into the Office of Lawyer Regulation. That is unbelievable that our attorney put on a lobbyist hat and didn't tell the client. He may have told some of the representatives within this government, but there are some people who went about negotiating the sale of public lands with a lot of private interests and didn't include the public from the start. They then decided, we'll find out after the fact what we actually own here. They didn't care about public trust. We care about public trust because we represent the public and we do the public hearings. I would suggest to you, you don't let this stand. And do not go into closed session to talk about this. We are not getting proper legal advice from Corporation Counsel, who were part of the meeting when I talked to Bushnell Nielsen and asked for updates on where we are on clearing title. And the language is broad, but you don't want to parse it out of the context in which it appears, which is to negotiate for title insurance. So that's my position on this. We will get more specific information on Monday. I also have it on the agenda. But thank you for letting me speak, because as chair, I can't do that in the ECD committee, and I certainly appreciate expressing my outrage at those people in Madison playing God on the public trust issues. Thank you.
Being distributed is the resolution that was passed in February. So everyone has the context.
Mr. Chairman, I think in some sense this gives a deeper meaning to the notion that Wisconsin is open for business and this county. What's interchangeable with business is special interests. And when this county is open to special interests in the ways that it's becoming obvious we are the public check and balance against that kind of abuse of power on the part of the executive.
Thank you, Supervisor. Try not to editorialize too much. All right. Anyone, any other comments? Is there still a desire by committee members to go into closed session to hear an update on it, or what is the pleasure of the committee? Are you noticed for closed session on the item for economic development?
We have both the item, the legislative item, and T. Whaley Smith is to come in and tell the committee about
the legislative decree to give information in a public hearing. It is noticed for closed session on the continued strategies with regard to the transit center. And whether the committee actually votes to go in closed session at this point, I don't know, because as I say, I think our attorney has now violated his attorney-client trust. And I think we need to start getting OLR involved. Why should the legislative branch continue to take that? But anyway, I don't know what we're going to do. It is notice for closed session.
Okay, so there may be the option. Supervisor Weisham.
Thank you. I don't know how much blame I want to put on an outside law firm that was just the direction from our principals here. So I don't know if we want to get sidetracked into that. I think this is an internal housekeeping issue of how we relate to each other. As I said earlier, I think something of this magnitude, I'm surprised that it's not on the list of things to be discussed, especially if we're going to the lengths of getting things done in Madison. So I would think I have a lot of respect for that law firm, and I think that they were doing what they were directed to do or by the people who they thought
were in charge of the process.
Supervisor.
But once again, I think that takes away from the issue. We need to focus on getting the couture and our development issues taken care of. And like I said, we'll be taking care of our internal business at an appropriate time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there a desire to go into closed session? I'm not seeing a motion to go into closed session. Okay. Did you have something to add, Attorney Grady?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the questions that have been raised in public, I really would suggest that the committee go into closed session. I think we have a lot that we could tell you in closed session about why we are where we are today and what our reasoning as the supervising attorneys of the outside counsel are for where we are today. But that's not the kind of thing that should be discussed in open session because, as you know, we've been threatened with litigation or defensive litigation that we might bring. And so I think those kinds of discussions are why exactly why the closed session provision exists. And so if you don't want that, that's obviously your call. But I think there is some fair amount of information that we could give you. I think it might help explain our position on why we took the action we did in terms of directing outside counsel. And you may disagree with it, but I can at least explain our rationale for it.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's why my comments were directed toward being appreciative of what I was hearing this morning. And I would still like to go into closed session, if I may offer such a – I would move to go into closed session.
Motion.
I would move to do so because having heard what's going on – yeah, I'll do that. It's something that I believe that we need to know more about, particularly since you're the new chair of the committee. You have you could have the experience of three other former chairs here, and we do have two members, including a lawyer. So I think that we need to get as much information to each other as we can. Mr. Chairman, the committee may adjourn into closed session under the provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.85 sub 1 sub g for the purpose of the committee receiving oral or written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to pending or possible litigation with regard to the following matters. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene in open session to take whatever actions it may deem necessary. I so move.
All right, no second is necessary, but thank you. We have the
Mr. Chairman, I know it's obvious from our discussion, but just for the purpose of open meetings, the reason, the specific reason the motion is being made, as I understand it, is to discuss the potential litigation related to the Downtown Transit Center and the public trust doctrine and the development, the Couture development, and to discuss strategies related to that potential litigation. That's the purpose of going into closed session. I just want to make that clear for the record that that's why we're going into closed session.
Okay. And it is your advice. That is your advice. And I believe that supervisors would rely on that advice in casting their vote. We have a motion to go into closed session. Take a roll.
Supervisors Borkowski.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Weishan.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Rainey.
Aye.
Stafkunis.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
There are 7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to go into closed session is approved.
Okay, we'll give a moment to clear the room.